Welcome to a new special deep dive from the podcast AI Unraveled, created by Etienne Newman, senior engineer and passionate soccer dad from Canada. And hey, if you're finding these deep dives valuable, a quick tap on the like and subscribe button in Apple Podcasts really does help others discover us. So thanks for that. Speaking of valuable tools, definitely check out the show notes. We've got a referral link and a special discount code for you to sign up for Google Workspace. Yeah, you get access to some fantastic AI-powered tools like Gemini PRO, Notebook Polymer, and Teams. Honestly, they can seriously boost your productivity. And also, if you're gearing up for some tough professional certifications, those really challenging PBQs and simulation-driven exams, well, don't forget to explore Etienne's amazing AI-powered JamGat app. It's designed to help you ace them. All the details, again, are right there in the show notes. Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're diving into a really, really pressing global issue, this mountain of plastic waste that just keeps growing. Our mission here is to explore how artificial intelligence is offering a surprisingly elegant solution.
It's helping us engineer what people are calling super enzymes. You might have seen the image for this deep dive, AI Unraveled, AI Tackle Plastic Waste, AI for Good. That kind of hints at the hopeful direction we're heading in. Now, the scale of this plastic problem, it's almost hard to properly grasp. We're churning out around 400 million tons of plastic globally every single year. And get this, projections say it could balloon to a billion tons annually by 2050. And it's not like it's all being neatly contained, right? Every year, somewhere between, 19 and 23 million tons of this stuff leaks into our aquatic ecosystems. Yeah, you might remember hearing that figure of about 8 million tons just ending up straight in the oceans annually. And looking back, say, from 1950 to 2017, we're talking about an estimated 7 billion tons of plastic waste generated cumulatively. It's mind-blowing, isn't it?
It truly is. And what's striking isn't just the sheer volume. It's that upward trend. It just keeps going up. This isn't a static problem. It's an ever-increasing challenge for the entire planet.
Absolutely. And the impact, the impact on wildlife is just devastating. Around 100,000 marine animals, they estimate, die each year from getting tangled in plastic or, mistaking it for food. But it's not just the big visible tragedies. There's this growing worry about the long-term effects of microplastics on human health, too, as they get into our food, our water, that Great Pacific Garbage Patch.
Yeah.
It's just one, massive, stark visual reminder of the crisis we're facing.
Yeah, if you think about the bigger picture, it becomes really clear that our current system, make, use, dispose, it's just not sustainable. Not for plastic. The environmental fallout, the potential health consequences, they're significant.
Right. And for years, the mantra has just been recycle, recycle, recycle. And the intention's good, of course, but the reality is pretty stark when you look at the numbers.
Yeah.
Globally, only about 9%.
Sure.
Just 9% of all the plastic waste we generate actually gets recycled.
Which is incredibly low.
It leaves a whopping 91% that doesn't. And even the recycling that does happen, it has some pretty fundamental limitations.
And that raises a crucial point, doesn't it? How effective are our current methods, really, in tackling the core issue?
Exactly. A major issue is something called downcycling. So that plastic water bottle, you carefully put in the recycling bin. It might end up being used to make, say, a park bench. Which is useful, sure, but it can't go back to being a water bottle. The mechanical recycling process itself actually degrades the plastic. The quality just decreases each time.
Like making a copy of a copy.
Precisely. Often you have to mix it with new virgin plastic just to get anything usable.
Right, which kind of defeats the purpose.
And even then, it can typically only be recycled maybe once or twice. So we're not really closing the loop there.
Not in a true sense, no.
And it's not like traditional recycling is, an environmental saint either. Recycling plants themselves can release toxic emissions, and the whole process is pretty energy intensive. It has its own significant carbon footprint. In fact, I've seen studies suggesting that recycled plastics can sometimes contain even higher concentrations of harmful chemicals than new plastic.
Which really highlights the complexity, doesn't it? We need solutions that don't just handle volume, but also guarantee the quality and safety of whatever comes out the other end.
And then there's the economics.
Yeah.
Traditional recycling often struggles to compete. It's often more expensive and complicated than just making new plastic from fossil fuels, especially when oil prices are low.
That's a huge factor.
Plus, sorting all the different types of plastic, it's a massive logistical headache because each type needs a different process. All of this just feeds into those low recycling rates and why we keep relying so heavily on virgin plastic.
It really underscores the need to look beyond just tweaking the existing system. We need to explore fundamentally different approaches.
Which brings us actually to a truly fascinating development. nature's kind of accidental discovery of plastic degraders. It seems like as our plastic problem has grown, nature, in its incredible way, has started to evolve solutions. Mm. These serendipitous findings of microbes that can actually break down plastics, well, it's opened up an entirely new avenue for tackling this challenge.
It's a powerful reminder, isn't it? The resilience of life, its ability to adapt even to things we've made. These natural discoveries give us a fantastic starting point.
Okay, so let's delve into that natural blueprint then. Back in 2016, there was this really significant discovery by scientists in Japan. In sludge near a peat bottle recycling plant, they found this new bacterium. They called it Ideonella sakaiensis 201F6.
Right, I remember that.
And this tiny organism had this amazing ability. It could use PP, you know, polyethylene terephthalate, the plastic in bottles and packaging as its main source of food and energy.
Its carbon source, yeah.
This was basically the first concrete proof that nature had actually evolved to break down one of our most common plastics.
That was a pivotal moment, really. It shifted the whole idea of natural plastic breakdown from just theory to, well, a demonstrated biological fact.
And it wasn't just a one-off thing. Since then, researchers have found other natural organisms, other enzymes, with plastic-degrading abilities. For instance, there's an enzyme called LCC leaf branch compost cutanase, found in, you guessed it, leaf branch compost.
Makes sense.
And even more surprisingly, maybe, enzymes found in waxworm saliva. They've been shown to break down polyethylene.
Polyethylene, that's a tough one.
Exactly. Another incredibly common and notoriously difficult plastic to break down.
What's remarkable is just how diverse these natural solutions are, popping up in completely different environments. It really suggests that this ability degrading plastics might be more widespread in the microbial world than we first thought.
So how do these enzymes actually, you know, eat the plastic?
Well, the process is called enzymatic depolymerization. Enzymes, as you know, are biological catalysts. They speed up chemical reactions. In this case, they use water molecules through a process called hydrolysis to essentially snip apart those long polymer chains that make up the plastic.
Okay, hydrolysis. Snip the chains.
Think of it like a long necklace made of beads. Enzymatic depolymerization is like using tiny, very specific molecular scissors plus water to break the links between the beads. It turns that long chain back into its individual components. That's basically what's happening to the long plastic molecules.
Right. And a lot of the initial focus was on PET, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because of its chemical structure.
Exactly. PET has what are called ester bonds. And these bonds are, relatively speaking, more vulnerable to this kind of enzymatic attack compared to, say, the strong carbon backbones you find in plastics like polyethylene.
So the enzymes called PETases. They target those ester links specifically.
Precisely. They cleave those bonds, breaking the long peat chains down into smaller molecules, initially things called MAE and BATE, and then those get broken down further into their basic building blocks. TPA, which is terephthalic acid, and EG, ethylene glycol.
Okay, so the ester bonds are like the weak point.
Kind of, yeah. They make peat a more accessible target for these initial enzyme efforts.
And that bacterium, Ideonella sakaiensis, it's particularly good at this because it uses two enzymes.
That's right. It's a two-enzyme system. First, PETase starts breaking down the PTIC. Then a second enzyme, called METase, steps in to break down that intermediate molecule, MHET, into the final TPA and EG. It's like a little tag team.
A microbial tag team. I like it.
It shows how a coordinated system can achieve a more complete breakdown.
Now, is this limited just to PET? Or can these enzymes tackle other plastics?
Well, it's not just peat. Some enzymes, particularly those in the S-rays family, have shown they can break down other plastics too, like certain polyester-based polyurethanes, for example.
Okay, so there's potential beyond peat.
Definitely. It expands the possibilities.
However. And there's always a however, isn't there?
Usually is.
While these natural discoveries were groundbreaking, these naturally occurring enzymes, they're not quite ready for industrial prime time, are they? They have some big limitations.
That's the crux of it, yes.
For one thing, they tend to work really slowly. It can take months, maybe even years, to break down significant amounts of plastic.
Which just isn't practical when you're facing millions of tons of waste.
No way. Nature's priority, I guess, is just the organism surviving, not necessarily super fast industrial processing.
Exactly. Efficiency on our time scale isn't its primary goal.
And they also tend to be quite delicate.
Yeah.
Sensitive.
Yeah, stability is a big issue. They can lose their activity, their function, if the temperature gets too high or if the pH changes too much or if there are other chemicals around. All conditions you're likely to find in real-world waste streams, which are messy.
Right. And they often have a narrow focus, too, don't they?
Yeah.
They might only work well on specific types of plastic or even specific forms of it.
That's a key point. Like, the difference between amorphous PE and the tougher, more common crystalline PET.
Explain that difference again. Amorphous versus crystalline.
Sure. Think of the plastic molecules like tangled spaghetti that's amorphous. It's relatively easy for enzymes to get in an attack. Crystalline PET is more like neatly stacked bricks. It's much more ordered and compact, making it harder for the enzymes to access those bonds and break it down.
Okay, spaghetti versus bricks. Got it.
Yeah.
Easier to eat the spaghetti.
Much easier. So that physical structure really matters.
And as we touched on, the actual chemistry of the plastic is key. PET, with its ester bonds, is just more vulnerable than polyethylene or polypropylene with their strong carbon-carbon backbones.
Absolutely. That's why polyesters like PET were the first targets and why tackling those other plastics is, well, a much tougher nut to crack.
So nature gave us the spark, the idea. But to turn this into a real, practical solution, we need to seriously upgrade those natural tools.
We do. We need to enhance them significantly.
And that, finally, is where the power of AI comes into play.
Precisely. We have this fantastic natural starting point, but for the efficiency, the stability, the scalability we need, we have to leverage advanced engineering, and AI is proving absolutely invaluable there.
Right. Artificial intelligence, especially machine learning, it's really revolutionizing biotechnology and how we engineer enzymes. AI algorithms can crunch through enormous amounts of biological data, spot complex patterns, make predictions much faster and often more accurately than we ever could with just traditional lab experiments.
It lets us explore this vast, intricate landscape of enzyme possibilities in ways that just weren't feasible before.
So AI is helping in several key ways here. First, it's massively speeding up the discovery of new potential enzymes. AI can sift through huge genetic databases, including from places like landfills, which are surprisingly rich environments for microbes evolved to break down waste.
Metagenomics.
Right. AI can pinpoint genes likely to code for plastic-degrading enzymes way faster than old-school screening. Think of it like a super-powered search engine for the microbial world.
Instead of manually checking every possibility, AI flags the most promising candidates right away.
Then there's the optimization part. AI has incredible predictive power here. You train machine learning models on tons of data about existing enzymes, their structures, how active they are, how stable, what plastics they like.
Well, and properties, yeah.
And then the AI can predict how making specific tiny changes, mutations in their structure, will affect those properties.
So you can do very targeted, very efficient engineering. It's not just trial and error.
Exactly. The AI can say, okay, tweak this specific spot on the enzyme, and it should become much faster or more stable at higher temperatures. It's like fine-tuning an engine.
It allows for rational design, making informed choices about which modifications are most likely to give you the improvements you want.
But maybe the most exciting part is this idea of de novo enzyme design.
Ah, yes, designing from scratch.
Right, using generative AI models to actually create entirely new enzymes that might not even exist in nature. Models like RF diffusion or ZymeCTRL, they learn the basic rules of how proteins fold, how enzymes work.
The underlying principles.
And then they can generate brand new sequences predicted to fold into enzymes with, hopefully, superior abilities for breaking down specific plastics. It's like, instead of modifying an existing wrench, you're designing a completely new custom tool from the atoms up.
That really is a paradigm shift. We're moving beyond just improving nature's work to actually designing novel biological catalysts tailored for the job.
So AI isn't just a small step here. It feels like a fundamental leap in our ability to tackle plastic waste. It lets scientists navigate this incredibly complex world of protein design with amazing speed and precision.
Which cuts down development time dramatically. From potentially years to maybe just months.
And that acceleration is just critical if we want enzymatic recycling to become a real large-scale solution before, you know, we draw in plastic.
That rapid acceleration is absolutely essential given the scale of the problem we're facing.
Okay, let's talk about a specific example. FastPatase, developed at the University of Texas at Austin back in 2022. This is a really compelling case study of AI's impact, right?
It really is. It showcases the potential beautifully.
So the researchers there were tackling that core problem. Natural PTase works, but it's just too slow and unstable for practical use.
Yeah.
Especially at the higher temperatures often used in plastic processing to make PTE more pliable.
Those inherent limitations really highlighted the need for some serious bioengineering improvements.
So what they did was use a structure-based machine learning algorithm. This AI model looked at the detailed 3D structure of the natural PTase. Mm-hmm. And it predicted specific mutations, tiny changes in its amino acid sequence that would likely make it much better at the job, faster, more efficient, even at lower temperatures.
So the AI pinpointed the key spots to modify.
Exactly. It identified five key mutations. I think they were N233K, R224Q, S121E, D186H, and R280A.
Yeah.
When they combined those changes, boom, a significantly improved enzyme.
That targeted, structure-guided approach powered by the AI's predictions was absolutely key to developing fast PTase.
And the result was fast PTase. Stands for functional, active, stable, and tolerant PTase.
Yeah.
Clever name.
It is.
And it has some really impressive advantages. Speed, first off. It can break down various peaky plastics in just hours to days. Some reports said as little as 24 hours for certain types.
Which is an incredible leap compared to the centuries it takes naturally. That kind of speed makes it much more viable industrially.
And crucially, it works efficiently at temperatures below 50 degrees Celsius.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. It hugely cuts down the energy needed compared to processes requiring high heat. And it might even open the door to using it for environmental cleanup. Or you can't easily control the temperature.
Lower operating temps mean lower costs, lower energy use, and potentially broader applications. It's a win-win-win.
It's also effective on a whole range of PD products. Clear, colored, stuff from containers, fibers, fabrics, those ubiquitous water bottles.
Versatility is important for real-world waste streams.
And, maybe most importantly, it breaks PT down into those fundamental monomer building blocks, TPA and EG, which can then be used to make new virgin quality PT plastic.
That's the dream, right? True circularity, taking it back to the original components.
So FastPTase is just a fantastic real-world example of AI for good. It shows how combining these powerful AI tools with deep knowledge of biology and chemical engineering can give us tangible solutions to massive environmental problems.
It really leverages the power of big data in biology and chemistry. Using ML to predict that structure-function relationship is allowing us to design enzymes with precisely the properties we need.
It makes things that seemed almost impossible just a few years ago feel increasingly within reach.
It's a compelling proof of concept, absolutely. It shows what's possible when you merge AI with enzyme engineering for environmental benefit.
And this success with PAT is really just the beginning, isn't it? Scientists are now actively using AI to engineer enzymes for a much wider range of plastics.
That's right. The toolkit is being expanded.
Things like nylon, PLA, PCL, PHA, PHB, even those tougher polyurethanes we mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And for some of these, like nylon, I read that AI models are already showing really high accuracy, like up to 97%,
yeah,
in just identifying potential degrading enzymes.
It highlights how versatile AI is. It can be applied across the whole spectrum of polymers that cause waste problems.
And a big focus now in the research is pushing those key properties even further, right? Making the enzymes more stable for industrial conditions, more active so they work faster, more specific so they hit the right target, even in mixed waste.
Exactly. Enhancing stability, activity, and specificity are crucial for making enzymatic recycling truly competitive and scalable. Some labs are aiming for at least a twofold increase in activity or lifespan.
And those generative AI models like RF diffusion, they're really pushing the frontier on designing completely new enzymes, especially for those really tough ones like polyethylene and polypropylene.
Yes, the de novo design approach offers real hope for tackling those recalcitrant plastics with their super stable carbon backbones, which natural enzymes have largely struggled with.
It feels like we're moving beyond just tweaking nature to actively designing solutions.
That's the exciting potential, yes. Overcoming nature's limitations to create bespoke catalysts.
And there's some major players pushing this forward, both academic and commercial.
Definitely. You've got places like the University of Portsmouth's Center for Enzyme Innovation using AI and ML heavily.
The Baker Lab at University of Washington, known for protein design.
Right, applying their AI tools like RF diffusion. And the National Renewable Energy Lab, NREL, in the U.S., using machine learning to find enzymes, even for that tough crystalline PET.
And then companies getting involved, too, like Carbios, Protein Evolution, Epoch Biodesign, they're all actively using AI for enzyme development.
That combination of academic research pushing the boundaries and companies driving towards commercial application is really accelerating progress.
What's also really encouraging is how AI tools themselves are becoming more accessible. Things like Google DeepMind's AlphaFold being open source.
Absolutely. That democratization is huge. It lowers the barrier to entry and fosters innovation for many more researchers and startups globally.
So you get more diverse approaches, targeting different plastics, using different strategies.
Yeah.
It just increases the odds of major breakthroughs happening faster.
It fosters a much broader, more collaborative attack on the plastic problem.
So developing these AI-powered plastic eaters, it's not just a small tweak to recycling. It could fundamentally change how we manage plastics, right?
It really could.
By breaking them down to their original molecules, it offers this genuine path toward a truly circular economy for plastics. And that brings huge environmental benefits and maybe even a new economic landscape where waste becomes, well, a resource.
That shift from a linear take, make, dispose model to a circular use, recover, remake system is the core idea.
Exactly. So the big promise of AI-enhanced enzymatic degradation, especially for plastics like PE, is achieving true chemical recycling. Unlike mechanical recycling, where the quality drops.
Downcycling, yeah.
Enzymes can break plastics down into their original monomers. For PT, that's TPA and EG.
And critically, these recovered monomers are identical in quality to the ones made from virgin fossil fuels.
That's the key part. They can be purified and then used as raw materials to make new plastics that are indistinguishable from virgin ones.
Yeah.
It closes the loop completely. Plastic waste becomes the feedstock for new plastic.
So in theory, you could keep using the same plastic molecules over and over again, which would drastically cut our need for new fossil fuels just to make more plastic.
That vision of a truly circular plastics economy?
Yeah,
it's potentially a game changer for sustainability efforts.
And the environmental knock-on effects could be massive. You could significantly reduce the insane amounts of plastic ending up in landfills, polluting land, rivers, oceans.
Which would dramatically lessen the harm to wildlife and ecosystems, a critical step.
Plus, because these AI-engineered enzymes can often work at lower temperatures, the whole process is projected to be much more energy efficient.
Lower carbon footprint compared to making new plastic, or even compared to some other energy-intensive chemical recycling methods.
Yeah, some analyses I saw suggested energy use could drop by like 69% to 83%, and greenhouse gas emissions by 17% to 43% for enzymatic PET recycling compared to fossil-based production.
Those are significant numbers, especially for climate change mitigation efforts.
And there's even the potential for using these enzymes for environmental cleanup,
mm-hmm.
actually remediating polluted sites.
Mm-hmm.
And by being more specific, enzymatic recycling might avoid creating some of the toxic byproducts you can get from other recycling methods or, you know, burning plastic.
It offers a potentially cleaner, more environmentally benign approach overall.
Okay, but what about the economics? Can it actually compete?
That's always the billion-dollar question, isn't it?
Research suggests that if we can minimize the need for lots of pre-processing, which AI-engineered enzymes might help with, being more tolerant, then yes, enzymatic PT recycling could become cost-effective, even cheaper than making new PT from oil.
NREL estimated that recovered TPA could potentially cost less than $1 per kilogram compared to maybe $1 to $1.50 for petroleum-derived TTA. That creates a real economic incentive.
If it's cheaper, that changes everything.
Cost parity, or ideally a cost advantage, is crucial for widespread adoption.
And those recovered monomers.
Yeah.
They don't just have to become the same plastic again, right? They could be building blocks for other things.
Exactly. They could be used to make other valuable chemicals or even things like bioplastics, essentially upcycling the waste into potentially higher value material.
Upcycling adds even more economic value.
Mm-hmm.
And scaling this up would mean new industries, new green jobs in biotech, chemical engineering, advanced waste management.
Plus, it could reduce our reliance on volatile fossil fuel markets for plastic production, more economic resilience.
So if AI-enhanced enzymatic recycling can deliver on both the environmental and the economic fronts.
Wow. It has the potential to be truly transformative.
Recycled plastics could actually become the preferred raw material, driving investment in circular infrastructure, helping meet decarbonization goals.
The potential for a profound shift is definitely there. It's immense.
Okay, but we've painted a pretty rosy picture. Let's get real. There are still some significant hurdles, right? Challenges we need to overcome to make this a widespread reality.
Absolutely. It's crucial to have a realistic perspective. We're still relatively early in the scale-up phase for many of these technologies. The challenges are real.
So scientifically, engineering-wise, what are the big ones?
Well, enzyme stability is still a major one. making sure these engineered enzymes can hold up and keep working effectively for long periods under tough industrial conditions. Think high temperatures, fluctuating pH, mechanical stress in bioreactors, contaminants in the waste.
Right. Bioreactors aren't gentle places.
Not at all. Enzymes are biological molecules. Keeping them happy and active industrially is a big engineering challenge.
And how well do they cope with real-world messiness? Lab tests on pure plastic are one thing.
Exactly. Real post-consumer waste is a complex mix, different plastic types, colors, additives, leftover food, dirt. These impurities can potentially block the enzyme's access to the plastic or even inhibit its activity. Dealing with that heterogeneity is tough.
Then there's speed. Again, even with the improvements, are they fast enough for the sheer volume of waste?
It's critical for economics. Degradation rates need to be high enough to process massive amounts quickly and cost-effectively. Slower rates mean bigger, more expensive facilities, longer processing times.
And we talked about peat being easier. What about those really tough plastics? Polyethylene, polypropylene, PVC?
Still a major challenge. Their stable carbon backbones are much harder for enzymes to break. Tackling those will likely need more complex enzyme systems, maybe multi-enzyme cocktails, or perhaps pre-treatment steps to make the plastic more accessible, which adds cost and complexity.
Pre-treatment? Yeah, that could add up.
And we have to be careful about the whole process.
Yeah.
Ensure the byproducts are easily recovered, pure, and that nothing harmful is released. Environmental safety of the entire process is paramount.
Okay, so those are the science engineering hurdles.
Right.
What about the economic ones?
Well, producing the enzymes themselves at massive industrial scale needs to be cost-effective. Growing and purifying enzymes can still be expensive.
Right, the cost of the magic ingredient.
Exactly. Then there's the cost of building and running the huge bioreactors needed, optimizing the mixing, temperature control, pH. That's a big capital investment.
And integrating these new facilities into our existing waste collection and sorting infrastructure, that's not trivial.
No, integrating new tech into established systems always has logistical and economic hurdles.
And the elephant in the room, competing with cheap virgin plastic.
Always. As long as new plastic from fossil fuels is inexpensive, it creates a tough market for any recycled plastic, even high-quality, enzymatically recycled stuff.
It takes serious investment and time to get from lab breakthrough to profitable industrial scale.
Yeah.
That valley of death for deep tech.
Mm-hmm. We've seen pioneering companies face financial pressures trying to bridge that gap. It requires patient capital and often supportive policies.
Which brings us to policy, regulations, public acceptance.
Absolutely crucial. Governments can play a huge role with supportive policies. Think mandates for recycled content, taxes on virgin plastic, subsidies for green tech, extended producer responsibility schemes.
Clear regulations are needed too, especially for things like food contact applications using recycled materials.
Definitely. And building public awareness and trust in the safety and quality of these enzymatically recycled plastics is also important.
And since plastic pollution doesn't respect borders,
we need global coordination. Standards, collaboration. It's essential for a transboundary issue like this.
It feels like all these challenges are linked, too.
They absolutely are. If an enzyme isn't stable, you need more of it, raising costs. If it only works on pure PT, you need better, more expensive sorting.
So you need a holistic approach, tackling all these fronts together.
Exactly. It requires close collaboration, scientists, engineers, investors, policymakers, waste managers, everyone working together.
But despite all those hurdles, this whole area, AI-enhanced enzymatic plastic degradation, it really feels like a prime example of AI for good, doesn't it?
I think so. It's about harnessing advanced tech to tackle a major global challenge for societal and environmental benefit.
And it aligns so well with those UN Sustainable Development Goals.
It does. SDG 12, Responsible Consumption and Production Enabling Circularity.
SDG 14, Life Below Water Reducing Ocean Pollution.
SDG 13, climate action potential for lower emissions.
SDG 9, industry, innovation, and infrastructure driving green tech. It ticks a lot of boxes.
Framing it that way really underscores its broader importance and can help build support.
And AI's role in environmental stewardship isn't just limited to enzymes, is it?
No, not at all. AI is also being used to improve waste sorting, making it more efficient, more accurate, reducing contamination, maybe increasing recovery rates.
I saw figures like reducing contamination by up to 40%, increasing recovery by 25-30%.
Potentially, yes. And AI is even being used upstream in designing new materials, bioplastics, polymers that are inherently biodegradable or easier to recycle from the start.
So AI can help across the whole plastic life cycle.
It offers a much more comprehensive, integrated approach to the problem.
Looking ahead then, this field is moving fast. Lots of ongoing research, big investments.
It's incredibly dynamic. Major universities, research labs worldwide are pushing hard. Companies like Carbios, Protein Evolution, BASF are active.
And we're seeing some ambitious timelines for commercial scale-up, right? Protein Evolution targeting 2028 for a large plan. Carbios aiming for contracts soon.
Yes, the timelines are becoming more concrete, although challenges remain. But the AI-driven approach has definitely shortened the R&D cycle compared to traditional methods. Experts like Hal Alper at UT Austin, Greg Beckham at NREL, Jay Konietzka at Protein Evolution, they're expressing real optimism about achieving a circular economy and seeing significant environmental benefits.
It feels like there's real momentum building.
There is. The convergence of biotech and AI has given us this powerful new toolkit, and the research and development efforts are very encouraging.
Okay, so let's try and wrap this up. To summarize our deep dive today, the global plastic waste crisis. It's monumental, huge consequences. And traditional recycling, while important, just hasn't been enough.
But then came the discovery of nature's own plastic degraders, these enzymes, offering a completely new pathway.
And AI has stepped in as this incredible catalyst, revolutionizing how we engineer those enzymes, making them faster, tougher, more specific, more scalable.
We explored how AI speeds up discovery and optimization, leading to things like FASTPTACE, and how this really paves the way for a more sustainable future for plastics management.
Offering the potential for a truly circular plastics economy. Slashing the environmental impact, maybe even creating new economic opportunities from waste.
A fundamental shift from linear to circular.
But it's crucial we remember the hurdles. Significant technical, economic, logistical challenges still need to be overcome to scale these technologies globally.
Absolutely. It needs sustained research, major investment, and real collaboration across sectors to unlock that full potential.
It's not a silver bullet just yet.
No, but it's a very, very promising direction.
As we look forward, though, this synergy between biotech and AI, it offers a genuinely powerful, innovative approach to tackling this persistent plastic waste challenge. There's a real sense of hope, I think, for a more sustainable future.
It represents a fundamental shift in how we can approach waste, moving towards a more circular, more environmentally responsible system.
Okay, so finally, as always, a provocative thought for you, the listener, to mull over. What are the broader implications if we truly shift to a future where waste materials, like plastics, are genuinely seen and used as primary resources, not just waste, but feedstock? And maybe closer to home, what role can each of us play now in supporting this transition towards a circular economy? Even before these amazing enzyme factories are everywhere, think about our own consumption habits, the choices we make, how we support sustainable practices, and maybe even these emerging innovative solutions. Something to think about.